The Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder why so many evangelical Christians support a man like Donald Trump. The man does not seem to show the character of a Christian. Well, my friend, putting aside the fact that Jesus did not command us to have some mealy-mouthed, passive, gentle smile on our faces 24/7, putting aside the fact that there is also such a thing as tough love in the Bible, with example after example of Jesus and the prophets rebuking and condemning evil in a very loud, pronounced fashion, I will admit that when I first heard Donald Trump campaigning and talking about the Bible, and I first heard his stand on certain issues, I did not get the impression that he understood what a genuine born-again Christian was. Have things changed? I don't know. He's surrounded by pastors, and they claim he is listening to them and paying them serious attention. He may be saved. He may not be saved. Here's my point. I don't care. No, you're thinking, Bob, what do you mean you don't care? You're supposed to be a Christian apologist. This man has a soul. Okay, let me clarify. I do care about his soul. I do hope he finds Jesus. I hope everybody finds Jesus. It's between him and God, but sure, I hope it happens. What I mean is that politically, I don't care. America is not a theocracy. What I look for in a president is not a man who shares my theology or behaves like a pastor, but rather somebody who keeps his campaign promises, somebody who protects freedom of speech, somebody who protects religious freedom regardless of his own religious beliefs. If he shared my beliefs but did not protect my beliefs, I would be unimpressed. Let me say that again. If he shared my beliefs but did not protect my beliefs, I would be unimpressed. I want somebody who protects our rights, somebody who protects our national security, such as this executive order declaring a national emergency at our border. I want somebody who speaks out against barbarism, like infanticide, instead of cheering infanticide, as the Democrat senators of New York did. Now, Jimmy Carter was an example of somebody who did seem to understand what it meant to be a Christian. At least back when he ran, he seemed to understand that. So what? He ended up being a weak, spineless president, among the worst we ever had. I thought he was the worst we ever had till Obama came along. Anyway, 2 weeks ago, people all over the country were reminded of the many promises Donald Trump has kept. Even a CBS poll, no liberal network in any way, shape, or form, reported 76% approval of President Trump's State of the Union message. People are still talking about this historic State of the Union message, the best one ever delivered in my lifetime. Now, I did hear about Bernie Sanders going on TV as one of several people offering a rebuttal to the State of the Union address. I missed it. I wanted to watch Bernie's reply. I really did. Unfortunately, while Bernie was talking, there was some tough competition being broadcast at the same time. There were infomercials and shopping networks. I also heard that Channel 13 was showing a documentary on how to assemble a flashlight. And now, here's a man that anyone would want to listen to. Say hello to National Review contributor Mike Friedenberg.
Well, Bob, once again, thanks for having me on. And a whole lot of things going on this last week. I mean, it was Every week since
every
Donald
week's
Trump,
like that. Every week
since Donald Trump has been elected, and we've had President Trump.
I make plans of what I'm going to talk about on the radio. By the time Sunday rolls around, it's changed.
There's not been a slow week, but this week is one of the bigger weeks, and we saw the culmination of an ongoing battle that began once Donald Trump got into office. And let's just take it back there. He got into office. He had a Republican majority in the House, and he had a barren Republican majority in the Senate. Now, if I'm not going to go through it in gory detail, but if you were watching what was happening over the last 2 years and the way that the Speaker, Paul Ryan, manipulated the way the House looked at the immigration issues and border funding, he basically torpedoed any chance of getting anything done in the House. Now, to be fair, even if something had been accomplished in the House and Paul Ryan had not sabotaged it, it would never have passed
because
the Senate.
Because of that idiotic filibuster rule in the Senate.
Right, it would never have passed the Senate. However, by passing something in the House, that would have been something that President Trump could have pointed to. Look, we got this through in the House, and all we need to do now is add some senators.
And perhaps our Republican Congress might have been reelected and held on to Congress if they had done that.
I think
that
it would have helped them. That was a disappointment for the base. Let's just face it. As much as Donald Trump tried to nationalize election, he was not on the ballot. He tried to get people to feel like he was on the ballot, but really the loyalty that people have to President Trump did not completely translate over into the lower races. And that's, you know, that's the
yeah, frankly. This is one of the reasons I'm a registered independent now, not a Republican or a Democrat. Philosophically, I certainly agree with all the Republicans' claims, but I don't agree that they ever do anything about them. And that's what's so frustrating.
Well, that's something I do want to talk about a bit tonight. But one of the things I do want to talk about right here is that, you know, there's a number of people that describe themselves as conservatives or Republicans that are now opposing, you know, what Donald Trump is planning to do with the declaration of the emergency on the border, you know, shifting already appropriated funds to get the border built. And it's all very high-minded and principled. You know, National Review editors came out with an editorial. It was very well written. Oh, my heavens, the principles of our democracy, the purse strings belong to the Congress, not to the president. And the president is eroding that difference. And next time, what will happen? It's a slippery slope. What happens when the president is a Democrat? And we've set this precedent. So I know what you think about that, Bob.
Well, okay, I don't care that much for executive orders, but there have been a lot of them given, tons by Obama. And there have been executive orders that Obama has put into action that the courts did not bother with. But then when Trump tried to reverse them, they said he couldn't. So there's a lot of inconsistency. Well, the other thing, too, though, Mike, is I don't like a lot of executive orders. I'm not saying a president can never give one. Now, what really has been put mostly in the hands of our president is our national security. It's true that Congress has to declare the war. But sometimes you find yourself in a war before it's declared, and the commander-in-chief has to be able to think on his feet and not take everything to a committee. And so what I'm hearing conservatives say, well, next time we're going to have a Democrat, and he's going to declare that the Second Amendment is a national emergency. Okay, that is blatantly unconstitutional. The idea that a president protecting our borders and putting into it is his job. It's Congress's job, too. But in this case, if they're not going to let him protect the borders, I say let him do it. Besides, they've approved a lot of this stuff anyway, but they just haven't allocated all of the funds. He could go back to other times where they've made this approval.
So we have this principled conservatism, I'd call it. And you know, a lot of the people, you know, listen, the people that write for National Review and other publications, these are smart people. They're eloquent. They're well-read. They understand the fundamental principles of conservatism, but they have become so enmeshed in principles divorced from reality that they the conservative movement has not been effective for the last 20 to 30 years. Take a look at where we're at.
I'm thinking of a New Testament verse, thinking to be wise, they became fools. Thinking themselves wise, they became fools.
Well, it is foolish because the bottom line is that, first of all, is what President Trump is doing is fully it's not encroaching on the powers of Congress because Congress in 1976 gave specific ability for the president to spend funds in this case.
Exactly.
So it was Congress that ceded the power to the president.
Exactly.
So that's
not the
there's
same
no erosion
as a,
there.
That's not an executive order that's circumventing our Constitution.
That's not a order. That's number one. But number two is if they think, and you've brought this up before, you know, you have this frustration with Senator Mitch McConnell, the majority leader of the Senate, that he adheres by these time-honored traditions of the Senate. But you believe, and I agree with you, that when the Democrats get in power, that the filibuster, when they see a reason to get rid of the filibuster, get something done, it'll be gone in a split second,
well,
a nanosecond.
Well, as Sean Connery put it, McConnell's bringing a knife to a gunfight these days.
Yes, exactly. So the bottom line is that, and that's been one of the main issues with this staid and I would call it a moribund conservative movement, because they talk about principles, but they don't realize that we're living in the real world. And we have lost so much ground in the last 30 years to call the conservative movement successful. I'd love you to point to me where the great success is. We have exploding deficits. We now have the acting attorney general, you know, Whitaker, being questioned about where and how many people that are transgender are in his office. And the fact that he doesn't have enough transgender people's office is a big scandal. I mean, we have not been winning the culture war. We've not been winning the war on national debt, on fiscal responsibility. The left wing controls our public school systems. So tell me about this great successful conservative movement.
And they're trying to control our private school system.
Well, yes. And they're shooting for that too. Yes. So you have this principled conservative movement, you know, and as I said, I have a lot of a deep well of affection for National Review. Years ago, I had a chance to read.
Well, you even write articles yourself.
I've written some articles, and years ago, I had a chance to meet William F. Buckley myself, and I can tell you he is a fantastic guy, a true Christian gentleman, humble.
And we shouldn't assume that he would not be supporting Trump if he was still alive.
Right. Well, no, I don't think we could. But with that said, we need to reinvent ourselves, and we could take some lessons from somebody who's not a philosophical conservative, but whom I believe is a gut-level conservative. And let's talk about that gut-level conservative when we get back.
We will do that when we return. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
As if you haven't figured it out by now, Bob is mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life. But Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170. 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net. When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Thank you.
Bob Siegel Show.
All Americans, not only in the states most heavily affected, but in every place in this country, are rightly disturbed by the large numbers of illegal aliens entering our country. The jobs they hold might otherwise be held by citizens or legal immigrants. The public service they use impose burdens on our taxpayers. That's why our administration has moved aggressively to secure our borders more by hiring a record number of new border guards, by deporting twice as many criminal aliens as ever before, by cracking down on illegal hiring, by barring welfare benefits to illegal aliens. In the budget I will present to you, we will try to do more to speed the deportation of illegal aliens who are arrested for crimes, to better identify illegal aliens in the workplace, as recommended by the commission headed by former Congresswoman Barbara Jordan. We are a nation of immigrants, but we are also a nation of laws. It is wrong and ultimately self-defeating for a nation of immigrants to permit the kind of abuse of our immigration laws we have seen in recent years, and we must do more to stop it.
This is Donald Trump, and I approve this message, paid for by the Donald Trump campaign for 2020.
Yeah, well, there we have Bill Clinton. Not only is he talking about securing the border, he's using the term illegal aliens instead of undocumented workers. I wonder if Hillary made him sleep on the couch that night.
Well, that speech was given in 1995 at the State of the Union address.
Well, in 95, it wasn't politically incorrect to talk about borders, and in 95, a wall wasn't considered immoral.
And when he gave those lines, you had both Republicans and Democrats standing up. So in 1995, that's not that long ago. And it's very sad to see just how radicalized the Democrat Party has become. And I would love to be back in the age, in the day. I mean, at the time, I thought, wow, President Clinton, you know, is pro-abortion. I mean, I thought he was terrible. But nowadays, I've gotten to the point when if a Democrat is elected, you feel like the end of the country is coming.
Well, Clintons are chameleons. They'll say anything to keep them in power. If it was very popular amongst a lot of Democrats right now to protect the border, we'd be hearing Hillary talk about it. And we've heard Hillary talk almost as strongly about the border herself.
She has, but I'm going to say one thing here is that actually a mutual friend of ours, Steve Baldwin, knew Hillary back when she worked for.
Well, she is a Saul Alinsky disciple. No, I understand that.
So there is. I'm going to say that.
But she's also a politician, and she's changed a lot of viewpoints.
I'm going to still make a clear distinction between her and her husband. Her husband is not an ideologue. She is. So I'm going to say that Bill Clinton was not an ideologue, and he actually, you know, put through substantial welfare reform. He worked with the Republicans because he's not an ideologue.
Well, yeah, when Newt Gingrich took over the House, he at least worked
He did. Yeah. So I'm going to say, I'm not a fan of Bill Clinton, but he was a far, far better president than President Obama.
I must say this, though, Mike. When I said welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show and I heard all that applause and found out it was for Clinton and not for me, after I just welcomed them back, that was a little disappointing.
Okay, well, I'm sorry about that. so just a blast from the past, just to realize, you know, put some context around the debate we're having. Now, we were talking about...
Well, you could find Chuck Schumer giving speeches
absolutely. I mean, absolutely. So... We have the elite conservative opposition, what I call the do-nothing conservatives. They really don't do anything. And I have to admit that for years and years, I was active in politics. I did walk precincts. But I certainly spent a lot of time reading their stuff and thinking about it. And you know what? Fundamentally, the principles are good as touch points, but they can't be the end-all to the be-all. You look at them, you say, okay, yes— but there's going to be some exceptions. These are principles established by human beings. You know, the market generally works best, but the ultimate goal for a conservative is not to have a maximization of the use of capital. That is not a conservative goal. That might be a libertarian goal, but that's not a conservative goal. So this principled opposition basically gets us nowhere because they sit there and there's a certain element of moral equivalency. Okay, sure. The president is using an executive order, and Obama used executive orders for illegitimate purpose. But in this case, what it what President Trump is trying to accomplish.
There's actually a law that matches.
It's also the right thing to do.
It's an executive order that says follow the law.
But once again, what he's trying to accomplish is right. It's morally correct. Just because the process is the same, beyond the process, you have to look at what the end is.
But again, I would say that the process is not always the same because some executive orders are unconstitutional. Trump's is not, and that's a big difference.
But even if in the future a Democrat tries to use the same process to accomplish something that's wrong, it's still different than what President Trump is doing now.
Right.
And I understand the slippery slope argument, but we have let ourselves become paralyzed by the slippery slope. And the Democrats are never paralyzed by the slippery slope because they're happy to go down it. So, you know, one of the examples is that, and I know that frustrates you, is, you know, the principle of stare decisis in the U.S. Supreme Court. Yes, it is good that conservative justices pay attention to the principle of stare decisis and precedent, giving a lot of weight to precedent, but that can't be the only thing because—
I don't care as much about precedent.
I care about
what the Constitution
Right, you care
says.
About, but when the people that are the activists—
Because they could use that to say, well, 1973 gave us precedent on Roe v. Wade, so we can't change it.
Exactly. But the activist judges never—
They never go by precedent.
They may pay
anyway.
Lip service to president, or if precedent is the presidents are the presidents that they like, they'll pay attention. But if they don't like the previous presidents, they just blow out of the order and they rule they want to rule.
The activist judges do little more than put their fingers out to the window.
Okay. Well, they already know what they want to do, and they create a legal rationale to put their own principles and mores and values into the law. So once again, if we don't sit there and actually try to get things done and are always worried about what the Democrats are going to do in the future, the Democrats are going to do what they're going to do in the future. Any precedent we set, don't worry about it because the Democrats are going to blow through
this
precedent
right now.
This
idea that we'll act like gentlemen, so they'll act like gentlemen, it's insane. Okay, well, Mike, Clinton took up a little of your time, but we will be right back. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric.
Bob Siegel's novel, Push the Winds Around, is now available in both ebook and print copies. Check out this customer review from Amazon.com. Talk about a good read. Have you ever thought, if only God would allow me to go back in time to right my wrongs? What if I could change those decisions I made? What would be the outcome? Would the changes make a difference? If you have ever thought about that, then this book is your challenge. The story is so good you won't want it to end. You'll see why it deserves 5 stars. Bob Siegel, you've done it again. Can't wait for the sequel. Push the Winds Around. Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Hey,
96.1 FM, 1170 AM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel, and say hello again to my guest joining me today, National Review contributor Mike Friedenberg.
So, Bob, we were just talking about, I would call it the elite conservative side of things, and, you know, National Review. And National Review did a whole edition blasting and saying why we should not vote for Donald Trump when Donald Trump is running against Hillary Clinton. So I'm sorry, they really hurt the credibility.
I take that as an endorsement for Hillary Clinton. And well, I know a lot of conservatives, so I'm going to write in somebody else. That was a vote for Hillary Clinton.
Listen, it hurt Donald Trump's chances when he still won. But if he had not had so many conservatives, elite conservatives, I'll call them even utopianistic conservatives, conservatives who have lost touch with reality. If he had not had so many of those people working against him, he would have won by a bigger margin. He probably would have won. He probably would have been ahead of Hillary Clinton.
He might have won the popular
and
vote,
I hate to use that term. It's because it really is not a popular vote. There was no national popular vote.
That's
but if
right.
you take the totals
from all
the states.
And if they had taken a popular vote, people might have voted
differently.
And
by the way, without California, Trump won that vote, by the way, without California.
Yeah, and who knows how many of the votes in California were legal anyway.
Oh, we could look at that. But that's one thing. But what's even more frustrating to some degree, because we sort of expected that from that group, is that there's alleged big Trump supporters that are screaming about the fact that he signed this horrible bill, okay? And I want to address that because, first of all, let's just acknowledge just how we should be happy that President Trump is still even in office. He had a concerted effort, a determined effort to execute a coup. It was a fifth column, and they are still there. Hopefully, Barr will clear some of them out.
I hope so.
I'm not holding my breath about Barr, but I hope so. He had that. He had the Mueller investigation, and even though we know how bogus the Mueller investigation is, about 70% of this country watches media other than Fox News, and on those other media stations, when Mueller, does a conviction of somebody, they do their best to portray it as something to do with Russian collusion.
Well, for example, the Senate finally came out, bipartisan Senate. Yep. I hate that word, bipartisan, but mm-hmm. bipartisan Senate yep. committee came out and said they found no evidence of collusion, was not even mm-hmm. carried on the mainstream media.
Exactly.
They didn't even mention it.
So what I want to say is, people like Ann Coulter. Now, Ann Coulter used to have a purpose in the conservative movement.
And I do like her.
But lately, she has lost her mind. I mean, really, completely,
utterly
lost her mind.
Well, I wish she'd be a little harder on the Republicans that have been deserting Trump and not on Trump himself. Because Trump has been trying very hard.
No, she came out and said, the only problem we have is we have an idiot in chief. She came out and said that.
Now, and what's sad is she was one of the first people not only to support Trump, but one of the first to predict that he might
win.
But
I've been following her, and I'm just going to say that she also, for different reasons, is utterly unrealistic.
Oh, that's too bad, because I have always liked her. So that is too bad.
And when I hear people criticizing Trump that should be supporters of his, never once have I heard them offer and say how they could have done anything better. Given the opposition he's faced, there's not a person that criticizes him that most of them wouldn't have survived, number one. But number two, they can't think of anything alternatively that Trump could have done to get to a different position. Now, let's just take a look at this bill. It passed 300 to 128 in the House. It passed 83 to 16 in the Senate. That is veto-proof majorities. If Trump had not signed it,
the only thing I would add, though, is he signaled to Mitch McConnell that he was going to sign it. I don't think McConnell would have put it through if he was sure.
I want to say this,
Trump
though,
is
that when
I think he would have signed it even if it wasn't veto.
I'm going to say that. It's hard to say that because by the time the 35 days were up on the shutdown, there was clear-cut signs that enough U.S. senators were willing to shift over to break through the spending bill.
Okay.
Now, things have not improved since then, so I don't agree with that.
But they were talking about signing it ahead of time, so they were signaling
I understand.
There was a little bit of I may not. There was a little bit of
President Trump is a politically shrewd person. He saw where the U.S. senators were at the end of the shutdown, and he knew 100% absolutely true he did not have the support of the U.S. Senate.
One thing that concerns me, though, Mike, and I have not been able to find a clear answer to this as I've been listening to the news, there were some landmines put into that bill. I'm not clear on whether they're tied only to this immediate funding or whether they remain the law. For example, there's this law now about anybody that accompanies a child and claims sanctuary has to be granted one. Well, half the people accompanying the children are the cartel.
I'm just going to say this. When we look at that bill that way, we're straining at gnats. We're falling into the Democrat
trap. I think that's a little more than that. Is that now the law of the land, tied to this budget?
It was put in by one Congress.
But it was accepted by both Congresses.
The Congress, when you speak this way, the House.
Okay, and signed by Trump. So that is now the law. So he can build the wall, but there's other things about immigration law that also concern me.
I'm going to maintain that there's absolutely no way that another shutdown would have lasted more than a couple of days before enough people defected to get a veto of priority. That's what I believe.
Okay.
So number one,
are we going to do about some of those things that are in there?
Remember, all the Republicans signed these bills knowing what was in them, or roughly, you assume that they know them. 83 senators signed it. Okay, so don't they bear some responsibility?
Well, of course they do.
And then 300 House people
in
the House.
Well, my anger is far more directed at the Congress than Trump, but what are we going to do about those things that got through?
So first of all, I'm still going to call them noise. When you look at the overall size of the problem, it's noise. They're not good provisions. But the fact is, over the next 2 years, there is zero chance of getting any real good immigration reform done. Zero, because of the House. So the most important thing—
Your hope is it'll get overturned if we regain the House.
A lot of these things that if you can stop people at the border, a lot of these things do not go into effect. So given the situation, zero chances of really any kind of good immigration reform, any change in policies. The one thing that Donald Trump can do that he has a chance to do is this wall. And here's the thing is just a week or two earlier, we had Pelosi telling people not a dollar for the wall. He got $1.4 billion for the wall. So that was a major victory. And when we talk here about, and I'm gonna say this, Bob, you can look at them, but in the big picture, in the context is, let's say he gets back the House in 2 years from now. The next spending bill can reverse all those provisions if he has support from the Republicans.
Yeah, unfortunately,
we have
to put our faith in the Republicans again. All right, we will be right back. Bob Siegel Show. I'm joined today with Mike Friedenberg.
What I would say this, I looked at those poison pill provisions. What they were done is they were put in there to save face for the Democrats. In terms of what impact they're going to have over the next 2 years, in terms of actually stopping the flow of illegal aliens and illegal aliens becoming ingrained in our society, the wall would have an effect of a 10, and these provisions our noise will have an effect of a 1 or a 2. So that they were put in there so that Democrats could point to it and we could have conservatives talking about them and being frustrated. That's my view of them. Okay, that's where I'm coming from on that. So the wall was the big victory, and the emergency declaration are the news. Now, going back, we heard at the end of the shutdown how Pelosi, the tough new negotiator, had defeated Donald Trump. What I'm going to say is that now that we've had a chance to look at the polling, that is completely and utterly wrong. Donald Trump won the shutdown hands down. Number one, support for the wall grew by significant amounts during the shutdown. Support for the wall grew. Number two, the shutdown supercharged and increased the interest in his State of the Union by a significant factor. He had a 10% bigger audience for his second State of the Union than he had in his first State of the Union. His first State of the Union was actually one of the top four in terms of being listened to in the history of the presidency. His second State of the Union is the top second year State of the Union, except for possibly, I think, George Bush's because of 9/11. So it was a huge success. We know how good it was, and we know how much it won. So President Trump won the shutdown. But let's talk a little bit about some of these polls. Well, first of all, the polls that were taken regarding the State of the Union. 86% of the independents approved of President Trump's State of the Union speech. So that was an amazing speech. Independents. CBS pollsters found that 97% of Republicans approved of his speech. Nearly two-thirds of those polled, 66%, supported the president's immigration policies. 71% of those polled by CNN said that President Trump's policies would move the country in the right direction. 76% of those polled had a positive reaction to President Trump's speech. So the State of the Union speech was a great, great success. But beyond that, we can look at some more general polling. For example, Florida Atlantic poll, which was conducted after the President's State of the Union speech, was conducted for the battleground state of Florida. That is, that could be arguably considered to be the most important state for a Republican, that and Ohio. Okay, well, the Florida, it's found some very interesting things. For the border wall, the poll found that 55% of Florida voters now support construction of an additional wall along the border with Mexico, and only 37% oppose the idea. Now, what's significant about that is last year at the same time, Florida voters were evenly divided with only 43% supporting the wall and 45% opposing. So that's a 12% pickup in one of the most crucial states. Now, what was very, very interesting is that the independent vote, if this is something that's scaring the living daylights out of the Democrats, and I believe that this poll alone may have been enough to get Nancy Pelosi to fold. Because what they found is that that 50%, 59% of the independents supported the wall and only 29% opposed it. And that's opposed to the year before where only 37% of the independents supported the wall. So that was over a 20% increase in just 1 year in a key state. So there was polls coming out. The political poll, which was Morning Consult. Politico is a left-wing publication, left-leaning publication. It came out after the State of the Union, and it found even support, 47% to 47% for the wall and against the wall. These are huge numbers. And once again, we've talked about it last time, you also have to consider intensity. And I believe, and I would bet any amount of money on it, that the intensity of those who support the wall is much greater than those who oppose it. There's probably 20% of the country that is vehemently opposed to the wall. The rest of the people are like, yeah, I don't think the wall is a good idea.
And they're more vehemently opposed to Trump than the wall.
Right.
They're vehemently opposed to anything Trump stands for.
And a certain percent of those that said they oppose the wall are basically saying, because Trump supports it, I'm going to say I don't support it. So the bottom line is that Trump came at us. We had weeks of Democrats going on primetime TV, both on the left-stream media and, you know, on Fox News and other stations, trying to present their position on why the wall is immoral and why walls don't work. And it did not work. Common sense tells you that walls work. So they actually lost support for the wall during those 35 days. Now, at the same time, the voters did not want this government shutdown to go on. That's what the polls focused on. The voters didn't want the government shutdown. But behind the scenes, support for the wall grew because the more the Democrats were forced to actually come out and justify their position, the greater the support for the wall grew. And as was mentioned last time, there was a group of 30 Democrat House members that signed a letter telling Nancy Pelosi, hey, we want to get support for the wall. So Nancy Pelosi folded on the wall. Trump won that battle.
Okay, well, good to hear. We'll be back for one more segment. Bob Siegel. Buying or selling a home? Feeling overwhelmed? Facing what seems like unlimited choices? Believe me, your first and most important step is to find the right person to represent you and look out for your interests. Somebody who will help you save money while buying or make money for you when you sell. So listen carefully as I offer the best housing advice you're ever going to hear. What you want to do is contact Realty Executives All Area, and you want to ask for my good friend, Fred Falduti. Fred has managed literally hundreds of real estate transactions in the San Diego area and has handled just about any scenario you can imagine. Believe me, folks, you don't want to navigate the landmines of this economy without a skilled and experienced guide. But Fred is so much more. He will look after your interests as if they were his own. Give him a call or contact him online. Fred Falduti with Realty Executives All Area, 619-719-7717. That's 619-719-7717 or fredfalduti.com.
Bob Siegel not only writes fiction, but nonfiction as well. Over the years, Bob has received wonderful comments about his book on Christian apologetics entitled, I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But... Many have put this book in the hands of their seeking, unbelieving friends, and the book takes it from there. This is because the book has a rhetorical skeptic that argues with Bob about the harder, less frequently discussed questions. As a result, the reader is immediately aware that they are reading from an author who relates to them. The moment they find themselves questioning something they see, their very question appears in the text. Every question in this book was one that was personally put to Bob during his many years of speaking on college campuses. I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But... Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
One more segment left, probably not enough time to finish everything you had to say, but let's do what we can.
So yeah, just at a high level summary, we have the opposition, and I'm talking right now the opposition that's supposedly, you know, conservative Republican opposition. We have what I would call the elite conservatives, the utopianists, the ones that if we follow their advice, we'll continue to lose ground like we've been losing for the last 30 years. Then you have the people that should be, you know, more like Trump loyalists, the ones that are really understand the need for the wall, that they don't want to see a supply of cheap labor coming in and undercutting, you know, wages for everybody. But a lot of those people have let themselves be fixated on some provisions in the bill that in 2 years aren't going to matter that much. What's going to matter over the next 2 years is in 2 years, Trump by himself, almost single-handedly in a Herculean effort has managed to build support for the wall to about even or greater. Right now, more people will vote based upon the wall in support of the wall as their number one issue than people will vote against. This has been the result of President Trump's hammering on it and hammering on it. Over the next 2 years, either we build enough support to get the Republican Congress in place or we effectively have lost the battle on significant immigration reform. But the one saving grace on that is that we still have a chance with this emergency declaration to actually get the wall built, which will reduce the number of illegal immigrants coming into this country, being able to take advantage of provisions that were like incorporated in this bill. So we have to get to a Republican Congress that now understands that supporting immigration reform and supporting the wall is critical for their political survival. That's what has to happen over the next 2 years. And I think there's a chance that could happen because the president has shifted the narrative on so many things. When he came into office, none of the Republicans would touch trade issues. Now, virtually most Republicans agree that China has been cheating us on trade. They wouldn't say that before Donald Trump came into office. Now, most Republicans are saying, well, I guess we need the wall. Maybe some of them would love to see that cheap, illegal immigration labor coming in so that the business people that give to them that hire illegals can get it. But they're afraid to say it. They know they have got to vote a certain way. So The critical thing here is that if Trump can get the wall built, that buys us some time. That slows the influx of illegal aliens. Then we have to get some policies in place, for example, that stop catch and release. Also, there's a number of court decisions pending. For example, the DACA decisions pending and other decisions, for example, this emergency declaration. And if with the new judges that Trump is putting in place, along with the Supreme Court, we have can be optimistic that a lot of these decisions will go Trump's way. That once again will put him in a better position. So that's what we're looking for over the next couple of years here is a continued building of support for Donald Trump. And we're starting to see, as we've seen the political landscape shift, more of the Republicans that are more concerned about getting reelected than they are about doing the right thing are now seeing that, hey, this is a viable position and I can't get reelected holding it. In fact, by not holding this position, I might hurt my chances of getting reelected. So it's amazing what he has accomplished in 2 years. So I have to say, I hear people complaining about what he's done, I just think they're living in a different reality.
I give him a lot of credit. I'm still concerned. I know we, on paper now, have conservative justices in the Supreme Court, but Roberts seems to feel that he has to prove to Donald Trump that they can be objective. And in his mind, being objective seems to be going with the liberals at least half of the time. That seems to be Roberts' definition of objective.
I am
so
concerned.
So there's no
as
telling
well.
What that guy's going to do.
I think there's a number of things. I think that we'll get more.
Everyone's assuming that this latest thing, this emergency crisis, when it gets to the Supreme Court, they're going to go with Trump. I'm not assuming that.
And
I'm not assuming they won't. I'm just saying I'm not assuming they will. We're back to Kennedy with the 50-50 shot.
I am concerned as well. I do believe there's a very good chance that Trump will have a chance to appoint another Supreme Court justice. I'm not sure that Ruth Bader Ginsburg is going to last 2 years, but you never know. But I do agree with you that I am concerned about Justice Roberts. But since the original decision on the Obamacare stuff, he has been voting the vast majority of time with the conservative majority.
Well, so he went against Trump on that last one, though, the one where Trump was wanted to say that you can't claim sanctuary if you're not coming in through a point of entry. Roberts voted away from Trump on that one. And he got into a sparring match with Trump before it even got to him because he didn't like hearing Trump call court's conservatives.
Is posturing, and I do agree. There's room for concern.
There's nothing we can do
and
about it.
And there's nothing
it.
That, I'm just that saying President Trump can that, do about it, but I'm hopeful that he will rule on these key things. For example, the emergency declaration. The law is so overwhelmingly on Donald Trump's side.
He would really have to do some mental gymnastics to overcome
He did
that.
Some of that with the Obamacare, to be fair. So I hope we don't see something similar to that. But what I'm saying is that we've got to stay the course, and that if that wall gets built, if the wall slows down people being able to even get into this country, then all these negative things that happen once they step onto the soil will be reduced. They won't be stopped. They'll be reduced. But it does slow down the influx. The other thing that's important right now, too, is the census question. And we could talk about that briefly. Right now, there's a lawsuit pending that basically say the census question asking whether a U.S. citizen or not should not be included on the census. I think it's the 2020
right.
census.
Isn't that insane that they want to challenge the constitutionality of asking people on a census if they're a citizen?
And I believe that the question had always been on there until Obama took it off. So if that comes back on, that also would be a huge positive, because right now what happens is the congressional districts get allocated strictly upon how many people are in the district. If they knew how many citizens are in the district, they could allocate based upon the number of citizens.
Right.
So
right.
districts that have mass amounts of illegal aliens in them would not be given the same power as a district that
of
has
course,
all citizens.
Of course, an illegal alien could fill that out and check, yeah, I'm a citizen. And then they'll claim it's unconstitutional to double check that.
Well, it's there's always...
You're being a lot more optimistic about this than I am, Mike. I feel somewhat cynical.
They can do that, but I do believe that there could be a penalty for committing fraud on that. And if that was emphasized, let's put it this way. Yes, they can still do that, but it's better to have the question not to have the question.
Of course it is.
So those are some major things there. So contrary to the spin from the media and from some really, I think, conservatives that aren't taking a bigger picture, President Trump won some remarkable victories. It wasn't perfect. The bill he signed obviously had some major flaws, but he got Listen, once Pelosi agreed to give him $1.4 billion for the immoral wall, I mean, that undercut her position horribly.
Look, let me just say again, in case I haven't been clear, President Trump is doing everything he can to keep his campaign promises. The ones that are breaking their promises are the Republicans. And now here's what's really terrible. The ones who are keeping their promises are the Democrats, and they make horrible promises that we don't want them to keep. Thank you, Mike. We'll see you next week, everybody.
Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.